Chapter 5. 10 days after Lady Verinder's tragic death, the whole family knew about the secret marriage engagement. I didn't see Rachel until a month later. My aunt's will had named her brother-in-law, Godfrey Ablewhite's father, as Rachel's legal adviser. Rachel wanted to move. The house in London reminded her of her poor mother. The house in Yorkshire reminded her of the terrible affair of the Moonstone. Old Mr. Ablewhite suggested renting a house in Brighton. Mrs. Ablewhite could come and stay there with her. He asked Mrs. Ablewhite to make arrangements. Aunt Ablewhite has never done a thing for herself in her life. She found the rented house in Brighton by staying at a hotel in London and asking her son to find it. She found the servants by inviting her niece to tea. Drusilla, dear, I want some servants. You're so clever. Please get them for me. I went into the next room to make a list. I was surprised to see Rachel. She got up and took my hand. Drusilla, she said, I've always been so rude to you. I do hope you'll forgive me. Of course, like a good Christian, I accepted her apology. She invited me to come and stay with her in Brighton. There had been such a remarkable change in the poor child that I felt that I might at last be able to help her towards the only true happiness, the love of God. And the stay in Brighton would be a chance to begin the good work. She suggested that I should go to Brighton first to prepare the house. I accepted. By Saturday afternoon, I had found suitable servants and all was ready. The joy of being able to convert her to the Christian faith filled my mind with a heavenly peace. Having placed a few carefully chosen books in Rachel's rooms, I went downstairs to wait for them to arrive. They arrived at 6. Not with Mr. Godfrey, as I expected, but with the scheming old lawyer, Brough. I had prepared a little heaven for my Rachel, and here was a snake already. Rachel went over to the window and stared at the sea. "Tired, love?" I inquired. "No," she replied. "Just a little sad. Remembering happy days that can never come again. I've often seen the sea in Yorkshire with that light on it." Brough stayed the evening. I was sure he had a reason for accompanying them to Brighton. When he finally left for his hotel, he invited himself to lunch the next day. The next morning I took Rachel to church. At lunch she refused to eat, saying she had a headache. The lawyer jumped at his chance. "A walk is a good cure for a headache," he said. "I'll accompany you." She accepted his offer enthusiastically. "It's past 2, I remarked gently. "Afternoon church is at 3. But a minute later, they had left the house. They had got back when I returned from church. One look told me the lawyer had said what he wanted to say. I had never seen Rachel so silent and thoughtful. Brough got up to leave. He had, or pretended he had, to be in London the next day. "Are you sure of your decision?" he said. "Quite sure," she said. When he had left, she went to her room and did not come down to dinner. When I took up her cup of tea the next morning, I asked her whether she had had time to look at any of my books. "Yes," she said, "and they had not interested her." "I was wondering, my love," I said, "whether Mr. Brough might have told you some bad news." Her dark eyes flashed at me. "No, not at all," she said. "It was most interesting news." She looked out at the sea. "I suppose," I said with gentle interest, "that it was news about Mr. Godfrey?" She thought a moment, then said these remarkable words. "I shall never marry Godfrey Ablewhite." "What can you possibly mean?" I exclaimed. "The marriage is considered by everyone to be a settled thing." She looked at me very seriously. "Wait until Godfrey Ablewhite comes here today," she said, "and you will see. Now, please, Drusilla, I'm going to have a bath." It was the best way of making me leave the room. After breakfast, she wandered aimlessly from room to room, then suddenly sat down at the piano and began hammering out shameful tunes from the most unchristian shows. I was forced to leave the house. Returning, I entered the dining room and found myself face to face with Godfrey Ablewhite. He made no attempt to leave. On the contrary, he came warmly forward to greet me. "Dear Miss Clack, I've been waiting to see you." He knew my friends must have kept me informed of his shameful neglect of our charities. Perhaps he wanted to explain his behaviour. "Have you seen Rachel yet?" I asked. He sighed gently and took me by the hand. I'm sure I wouldn't have let him if he hadn't given me this astonishing reply. "Yes," he said, perfectly calmly. "And we talked about our engagement. She has decided to leave me free to make a happier choice elsewhere. And I have agreed." I stood staring at him, my hand in his. He led me to a chair. "Suppose we sit down," he said sweetly. The man has such a way with ladies, I felt completely helpless. I remember he was very affectionate. "I have lost a beautiful girl, an excellent social position, and a large income," he began. "I have agreed to it without a struggle, and curiously, I don't care. Now, when I think about it, I don't even know why I proposed marriage to her. The result, however, is that I have neglected my dear ladies. I feel like a child who doesn't know why he's been naughty." I remember he became even more affectionate. He even put his arm round my waist. "Dear friend," he went on, "the idea of marrying Rachel seems to me now like a strange dream. My true happiness is with my dear ladies in doing my modest Christian work. I don't need an income or a social position or Miss Verinder. A month ago I was pressing her to my chest. Today she told me she loves another man and that marrying me was an attempt to forget him. Can you explain my behaviour, my dear friend?" "I certainly can't." I could. The pure Christian side of him had finally rejected the idea of marriage to Rachel. I told him this in a few sisterly words. His joy was beautiful. He compared himself to a man coming out of darkness into light. Our brother had returned among us. I let him do what he liked with his hands. I felt my eyes closing in self-forgetfulness. Then the dinner bell rang. I jumped up. "I must rush to the station," he exclaimed. I asked him why he was in such a hurry. "I must tell my father about this." His heart was set on our marriage. He hurried out. I went in to lunch, naturally curious to see how all this had affected Miss Rachel. She was silent, distant, yet seemed to be relieved. I had the impression she felt free again to think about the man she loved. I was sure old Mr. Ablewhite would arrive that night, considering the importance his greed had attached to his son's marriage to Rachel. He arrived the next day, followed soon afterwards by Mr. Brough. "Well, this is a surprise, Mr. Brough," he said. "When I left you yesterday, I hardly expected to see you here today." "After our conversation," Brough replied, "I thought perhaps I might be of some use." He seated himself by Rachel. Mr. Ablewhite stayed purposefully in the middle of the room. "Rachel, my dear," he said most affectionately, "I have heard some very extraordinary news. Please, would you come into the sitting room with me? Whatever you want to say to me can be said here in the presence of my..." She glanced at Mr. Brough. of my mother's old and trusted friend.
Very well, my dear, Mr. Ablewhite said patiently.
He took a chair, smiling sympathetically at her.
It's obvious you two have had a lover's quarrel.
Let us understand each other, Mr. Ablewhite,
she said.
No quarrel took place between your son and me. If he told you I suggested breaking our engagement, and that he agreed, he told you the truth.
Mr. Ablewhite went slightly red, but replied sweetly,
Come, come, my dear. Don't get angry, and don't be hard on poor Godfrey. He means well. Mr. Ablewhite, we have agreed to remain cousins. Is that clear?
He went a shade redder. Must I understand, then, that your engagement is broken?
That is what you must understand, Mr. Ablewhite. And that is all I have to say. She turned and stared out at the sea. Getting up, Mr. Ablewhite pushed his chair back so violently it fell over.
If my son doesn't feel insulted, I do, he announced.
Rachel looked at him surprised. Insult? She said.
Mr. Ablewhite was now purple.
Yes, insult, he repeated.
I wasn't considered good enough for your mother's sister, and now my son isn't good enough for you.
A few wise words will help them, I thought to myself, and I got up. As an affectionate well-wisher, I said, holding up one of my books, I am sure that these Christian words of love may...
Mr. Ablewhite knocked the book out of my hand.
Shut up, he shouted, and turned to Rachel again.
It is my duty to inform you, young woman, that if my son isn't good enough for you, then I certainly can't be good enough to remain your legal adviser.
He smiled bitterly, bowed, and marched out of the room.
You idiot, said Aunt Ablewhite, turning on me. You're the one who annoyed him. I hope I never see you and your stupid books again.
She went over to Rachel and kissed her.
I beg my husband's pardon, my dear. Please, is there anything I can do?
Answering for Miss Verinder, said Bruff, could I ask you to leave the room for 10 minutes?
She left without a word. He looked hard at me, expecting me to follow, but soon gave up.
My dear Rachel, he said,
would you like to come to stay with us in Hampstead until we've decided what to do next? She nodded before I could even say a word.
Stop, I said. Mr. Bruff, you're not her relative. I am. I invite her.
Rachel looked at me with cruel astonishment. Bruff said nothing.
Rachel, dearest Rachel, come and share my modest home with me.
You're very kind, Drusilla, she said, but I have accepted Mr. Bruff's invitation.
Oh, Rachel, I cried. Please don't say that. Please don't go. I dream of making a Christian out of you, like I was trying to do with your poor dear mother.
I tried to take her in my arms, but she jumped back, looking at me almost in horror.
Enough of your insults, she cried. My mother was the most Christian person I have ever known.
She turned to the lawyer.
It disgusts me to breathe the same air as her. Now, Mr. Bruff, I must prepare to leave.
I was left there, alone, abandoned, hated by them all.